to The Book Cooks, where we talk about books with your host, Librarian Selena.
I love reading books, it's fun. I often read them with my mum. I like reading to explore. There's no better way, I'm sure. I love reading.
Right here on Planet 104.6 FM. Stay tuned for the next half hour as we find more great books to read. Good evening, readers and listeners. Tonight we have Andrew with us on The Book Chooks. He's a keen cyclist and loves reading and having adventures. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Selena.
Hey, before we get into chatting, let's have a listen to this song called I Like Big Books and I Cannot Lie.
Oh my gosh. Brittany, look at her books. They are so big. She looks like one of those nerds. But who understands all that literature anyway? I bet no guys talk to her because she looks like a total weirdo, okay? I mean, her books, they're just so long. I can't believe they're just so many pages. It's like, why? I mean, gross.
I like big books and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny that when a girl walks in with glasses on her face and a book bag on her waist, you look twice. That brain is nice because you notice her bag was stuffed full of the books she's reading. On Hunger Games she's feeding. Oh baby, I want to get with yous. Not them books or pictures. Library gave me Jane Austen. Pride and Prejudice is so awesome. Hazel Lancaster on the day Augustus asked her. It would be hotter if there was an A. Harry Potter. I've seen girls skimming, but they sure ain't winning. My girl's nerdy and smart, and she can read my heart. I'm tired of magazines, saying dumb girls are the thing. On any day you ask me, she gotta know Great Gatsby.
So nerdfighters, yeah, nerdfighters, yeah. Girlfriend got the book,
heck yeah.
To read it,
read it,
read it,
read it,
read them big old book.
Baby got books.
Baby got books.
Okay, that's a crazy song, but I like big books and I cannot lie. But Andrew, I see you don't have any books on you.
No, it's in my Kindle.
Oh, show us your Kindle. All right.
I find I do most of my reading when I'm doing sort of cycling trips, so I think it's on my tablet these days, but I still have a big bookcase in my room.
Yeah.
I suppose my favourite author of all time is Wilbur Smith.
Yeah.
It's historical adventure.
Yeah.
Based in Africa.
Yeah.
I started reading his books when I was about 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of, when I was about 11 or 12, I was diagnosed with dyslexia and I had a poor reading age.
Right.
And with the proper teaching, I was reading sort of advanced novels sort of within 6 months. It's just a different way of teaching, I suppose, the left-hand side of the brain.
Ah, okay. Let's have a look at your Kindle. It is quite big, though. It's, you know, about two hand sizes big.
Yeah.
And, so I can't see.
That's the Kindle there, so I just turn on the applications.
Oh, so you turn it on and you sort of swipe like a tablet.
Yeah, so I just download different books.
Oh, okay, so you're a big fan of Wilbur Smith.
Yeah.
And how many books has Wilbur Smith written?
Oh, maybe 20 or 30.
What?
Yeah, he's been around a long time. He's been around he must be in his 80s now.
Oh, okay. So I went looking for Wilbur Smith in the library because I haven't actually read any of his, and I found this one called The Burning Shore.
Yes.
Is that like one of his first ones?
Yeah, it probably is. It's I'm sort of rereading all of his ones I started to read as probably 11 or 12 year old.
Ah, right. And so when was he, I'll just read this little bit. Wilbur Smith was born in Central Africa in 1933. He was educated at Michael House and Rhodes University. He became a full-time writer in 1964 after the successful publication of When the Lion Feeds, and has written over 30 novels, all meticulously researched on his numerous expeditions worldwide. His books are now translated into 26 languages. And like this book I have here, it's very fat. It's like 630 pages. So well done for getting into his novels. What one are you reading at the moment?
The Sound of Thunder.
The Sound of
Thunder. I've just finished that.
Yeah, was it good?
It was awesome, yeah. It's sort of based on a family and it sort of goes through the generations.
Yeah.
And it's Sean Courtney. And he's basically a bit of a rogue, but he's sort of in and out of money and adventure and hunting. I suppose it's not very PC these days, but back in those days, you know, they hunted for ivory back in the 17th or 18th century. And, and made their fortune very quickly through gold mining and things like that.
Right. So it's more like a saga of this family Africa,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So
there's different families as well. There's the Ballantines. There's different, I suppose, series of books he writes.
Yeah.
He's also written ones about ancient Egyptian times, but all on Africa.
Wow.
It's just through different generations, I suppose, different centuries.
So as you read them and you go along, you find out more about the history of Africa and
people. Yeah, it's all based, yeah. He does sort of meticulous sort of research.
Does that make you feel like that you're actually living there or in that
area? He's very descriptive.
Yeah.
It feels like you're actually in the desert. It's just the way his writing. I've never ever found an author who's as descriptive as him. I suppose that's why I always go back to him.
Yeah. And he's still writing these novels?
He's still writing, but I believe he's sort of co-writing it now. And what I found of his latest novels, they're not as descriptive. So it starts off really, really well in the first sentence, and then it almost feels like the ghostwriter's taking off after that.
The ghostwriter's?
Yeah, he's co-writing it with someone else. He does say that on the title. Yeah, so...
Oh, okay.
It's not... And I don't think he's got the talent to pull it off like Wilbur Smith has, but I think maybe that's why he's... But he's in his 80s now,
right.
So...
he's keeping it going, though.
He's keeping it going.
So I'm just looking at the fly sheet of this novel. It says, the novels of Wilbur Smith. So there's The Courtneys, and there's a whole list of titles. And then there's The Courtneys of Africa, and another whole list of titles. And then the Ballantine novels, which is another bunch. The Egyptian novels, and then... look at how many. I don't know. There's just heaps, so... do you have any extract from your one that you would like to read?
Yeah,
to share with the listeners or readers who haven't heard and maybe want to find out.
I'll read the first page. I mean, this is what I love about it. He sort of paints a picture.
Yeah, okay.
So this is the first page of the book. For years of travel in the roadless wilderness that had battered the wagons, many of the wheel spokes and dizzle boons, had been replaced with raw native timber. The canopies were patched until little of the original canvas was visible. The teams were reduced from 18 to 10 oxen each, for there had been predators and sickness to weed them out. But this exhausted little caravan carried the teeth of 500 elephant, 10 tons of ivory, the harvest of Sean Courtney's rifle ivory that he would convert into nearly 15,000 gold sovereigns once he reached Pretoria. Once more, Sean was a rich man. His clothing was stained and baggy, crudely mended. His boots were worn almost through the uppers and clumsily resold of raw buffalo hide. A great untrimmed beard covered half his chest, and a mane of black hair curled down his neck where it had been hacked away with blunt scissors above the collar of his coat. But despite his appearance, he was rich in ivory and also in gold, held in vaults in the Bank of Pretoria.
Well, sounds intriguing. And then I think he has a romance, doesn't he, with another lady?
Yes, he does, yes. He's always, it's adventure, romance.
So recommended, Wilbur Smith. Great. Talking about Africa, I was recommended this book by one of the authors who came on BookChooks before, who's also a keen cyclist, And he said, I'll read this one, Ubuntu, One Woman's Motorcycle Odyssey Across Africa. So it's by a lady called Heather Ellis. She's an Australian, and she decided after a few years working in the mines in Australia, she wanted to take off and explore the world. So she took off and cycled across Africa. And then it took her maybe 15 months, and then she wrote a book about it. So I was reading that, and I would say, though, she had adventures, but she did go from place to place. But I did feel it was a little bit lacking of the description, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I sort of I read these autobiographies. I remember when I was about to paddle down the Danube, and I read this book, and it was about the guy who had done the fastest trip around the world at the time by bike.
Mm.
And I'd always fall asleep because I found it so boring.
Oh.
Because, yeah, it was just totally lacking description. And he'd always go on about how every page would be about how sore his bottom was.
Oh, no.
And
well,
it was just, yeah, it was
you
just...
You don't really want to read
no,
that.
No, no, so it just always sent me to sleep.
Well, she went to all these different places,
I'm sure a lot of these
sort of
people that, you know...
passed through and...
Yeah, unless you, I think you've got a detailed... diary and can descriptive in your writing, maybe I think it's better for a ghostwriter to do it because
she did it was very detailed. Obviously she must have kept the detail because she wrote about what she ate and everything and remembered all that detail, but it was mostly about her. It wasn't really about the people she met and the scenery, and it was mostly her issues and problems. And I was like, every traveller has that, you know, they don't know where they're going to stay and what they're going to eat and where they're going to sleep. But
I suppose the beauty for me travelling is meeting the shepherds in Kazakhstan. It's the people you meet. The more travelling you do, a mountain is a mountain, a lake is a lake. It's the people that make the journey.
Yeah.
It's and there's some incredible people out there that I suppose you don't hear about in the press, but who exist these days, like nomads and
pygmies.
There's incredible wealth of knowledge. I was cycling through Canada last year, and I came across a tribal sort of area, and I spoke to their main hunter of the tribe. I think it was the Stony people.
Yeah,
and I spoke to him to about probably 3 or 4 in the night.
Yeah,
he was just incredible. All of that knowledge from the elders had been passed down to him.
Wow,
and it was just fascinating.
Yeah, he'll have lots of stories to tell you and all about the history of his people. And
yeah, he said he was always learning, and basically. I suppose that's the main pleasure I get with doing these things, because I suppose if you're on the backpacking, it's very hard to find these people. They're not going to be in youth hostels.
No.
You've got to get out of your comfort zone and get out in the wild and meet these people.
Yeah, well, this lady, she had read a lot of Wilbur Smith novels like you, but then she had, The Lonely Planet Guide as... She called it her Bible. But the Lonely Planet Guide is only really going to give you, hostels to stay at and backpackers.
Yeah.
And, bars and restaurants and, in some detail about the country.
Yeah.
But it's mostly, that trail of, that well-worn trail that you're not meeting, the real people.
I try not to even do too much research if I'm about to go anywhere. I've got a basic idea of what I want to do, and I don't read... I don't read the Lonely Planets because I don't want to be meeting someone.
Surprised.
Yeah, I just want to sort of. I suppose I'm quite spontaneous, and I want to just.
Yeah.
Some days, if there's a howling headwind, I might not do a long amount of kilometres, but you might find that you'll have to meet some amazing people along the way, and you want to stay longer. So I suppose that's how I sort of do my trips.
Okay.
It's more based on the weather and the people.
Yes.
I suppose if you've got a beautiful, beautiful place that you're at and you've got no one to sort of share it with, it's still a bit boring. So that's beautiful. Then you move on.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, Andrew, we'll take a break and we're going to listen to the Proclaimers walking 500 miles and then we'll come back and talk about some more books.
Okay.
Wake up, well I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more than be the man who walked 1,000 miles and fall down at your door.
I'm working, yes I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home,
when I come home,
oh, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well I know I'm gonna be the man who's going over you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be a man who walks 1,000 miles to
I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home,
when I come home,
yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Book Chooks on Planet 104.6 FM in Auckland, New Zealand. If you missed the first half of our show, you can download and listen to us online at planetaudio.org.nz/bookchooks.
Also, check out our Goodreads group. The link is on the website where you'll find the list of what we're reading on the bookshelf. Hey, Andrew, I found this pamphlet about the Auckland Writers Festival coming up in May. 16th to 21st of May at the RTS Centre. I don't know if you go to that or hear about it.
No, tell me more about it.
They have it every year in Auckland and they bring authors from all around the world to talk about their books and share and, you know, have panel discussions and everything. And so they've got all these authors. I'm just looking at the brochure and I can't really see any names of those that I'm familiar with. I'm a bit ashamed to say. But maybe you might, and some names might stand out to you. But, you know, with the book chooks, it's free to listen to us, whereas you have to pay to go to this writer's festival. So that's coming up. But I don't know, maybe if all these authors and writers are coming to town in May, maybe they could come on the book talks. What do you reckon?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so I'll just give you that to have a look at. And well, said I was going to talk about more books. Well, Andrea, that was interesting. You said you don't really research when you go on your travels on your bike. But for me, I do a little bit of research just to know where I'd like to go. And I was reading this one, Field Guide to Auckland. This book is a travel guide, not a Lonely Planet, exploring the region's natural and historic heritage. And so it's just on Auckland, and it has little tabs for North Shore, West, Central, South and Islands, and North. And then it's got tabs on rocks and landforms, plants and animals, and history. So I just kind of flick through it, and it's got maybe 160 different places around Auckland you can explore, and maps. So I wrote a little bucket list of things I want to do, because I don't take off like you across the world, but I can like do little trips around Auckland. Yeah, so that's that one. And then I have these big books, which this one I found at the op shop, and it was only, what, $2? But it's called The Reader's Digest Illustrated Guide to New Zealand, and it's just a massive big coffee table book of New Zealand. And no, I haven't read it all, but just looking at it and thinking, oh, where'd I like to go?
Is there any place you'd like to go in New Zealand
well,
you haven't been to yet?
Well, last year our family did a road trip down to the South Island, and we did the bottom half, but there was one route that we didn't go down that I'd have liked to have gone down, and that was the Catlins.
Yes, it's I actually just come back from here.
Yeah?
I flew down to Dunedin and then cycled via the Catlins to Bluff and then over to Stewart Island.
Yeah?
And then back up to Dunedin again. It was stunning. Absolutely. I've sort of cycled the circumference of New Zealand, and I would rate the Catlins right up there with, this, I suppose, the North Island, Northland East Coast and the South Island West Coast. I think it's in the top three coastal. Kaka Point, absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
Beautiful places there.
Let's have a look. Well, the Catlins, was it a windy road?
Yeah, it's very windy, very hilly, very windy, exposed. The wind comes off the Roaring Forties and just hits into there, so... you've got lots of wildlife. You've got penguins, seals, which I never saw, but I was thrilled because I went to Stewart Island and I saw 5 wild kiwis. So.
You saw kiwis? Did they come up to you?
Yes. It was at a sort of Allen's base camp right in Stewart Island sort of, and I was staying, there's only 3 of us staying there, just tenting, and the couple that were there had... We're extending their stay night after night because they desperately wanted to see kiwis.
Yeah.
And I went out with Nadine, a German girl, and we saw one scream across the driveway.
Scream?
Where it just ran in front of us. Because you hear them calling. They're going to really...
What do they sound like?
Oh, I'm terrible at mimicking noises, but they're very... The male and female are quite distinct.
Oh, okay.
So as soon as you hear them, they're very close.
Yeah.
And then she shone the light, to my horror, on the bushes because the bushes were moving.
Yeah.
And out popped a kiwi. And he was fascinated. He had come right up to our feet and then circled right around us. He was just very curious.
Yes.
And then he'd go away and then he'd look back at us and then come and circle around us. And this sort of lasted maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And then he took off. And then we went to get back... back to the place to get her travelling partner, and no Kiwis around. So then I went back with him later on after playing cards, and we saw some more Kiwi. And then the following day, I went to Olver Island. I was not expecting to see any Kiwi during the day, and saw two different Kiwi on the Dock Island.
Yay, two Kiwis.
So if you want to go to Stewart Island...
Yes, I haven't been there.
You've got to go and make the time. You've got to go out and look for them. It's normally after them. Normally after about 9 p.m. you see them, and you'll hear them first.
Because they're nocturnal, right.
Yeah, but if you want to see them during the day, you go to Olver Island, which is about 5 minutes boat ride from Stewart Island.
Well, that's giving me ideas. So aren't there any Kiwis on Teritori Matangi?
I'm not sure.
Oh, because this was in the field guide to Auckland of places you could go. I just thought, well, it's a wildlife sanctuary. Would they have Kiwis there? But I don't know. You haven't been there, have you?
I have, but a long, long time ago. Oh. I believe it's very beautiful now with the bird song. And
yes, and there's another island called Rotorua Island that they've just made into a wildlife sanctuary. I don't know if it's open to the public yet, but I think it will be because I've heard about it. So that's another one that's sort of around Auckland. If we can't just take off and get away, like some people are privileged to, like you, but I don't know. Around Auckland's pretty good.
This waterfall that you've got in front of you, that's absolutely stunning on the Catlins. Oh, that's probably about, I don't know, 20 minutes walk off the main road.
Well,
They say it's one of the most photographed waterfalls in the world, which I found a bit hard to believe.
Okay, it's called Purakanui Falls.
Yeah.
It says here, Purakanui Falls, surrounded by a thick canopy of beech trees, tumbles over broad stone terraces. The falls are reached via a short walking trail and adjacent to a picnic area. So you saw that and... Wow, that's amazing. And, well, this book has photographs that can inspire you to get out there and explore. Did you see any penguins?
No, I didn't see any penguins and I didn't see any seals, but I've seen them in the past, so yeah. I was just super happy just to see the Kiwi.
Kiwis, yeah.
I think you've got probably more chance of winning lotto rather than seeing a Kiwi in the wild these days.
Oh, got to go to Stewart Island. You're giving me ideas now.
Yeah, it's absolutely... Even if you don't see any Kiwi, it's a very beautiful island, very beautiful beaches. Lots of walking to do.
So did you fly over there or take a ferry or what?
So I took the ferry. It's quite rough because you got the Fovo Strait.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's so rough is because you've got the wind and it's also very shallow.
Right, so you took it from Bluff?
Yeah, I took it to Bluff. It's probably about an hour or so.
Yes.
There's two German girls on the way back who looked very green.
Great.
I see sickness, but it wasn't too bad. The ferries are sort of multi-hull, so.
Ah, okay. Just a quick question. How long did you stay on the island?
Three nights.
Three nights. And it says here Oban is the main town. So was that enough to explore the island?
Yeah, I think I did like 30 or 40K on the bike around doing all the tracks, all the roads. I think there's about 20K of roading on the island.
Oh, going to have to base an adventure novel on the Stewart Island, maybe.
Yeah.
And get writing. All right, Andrew, that's great to hear of your travels and reading Wilbur Smith, and I'll have to get into reading him when I finish all my other books. But, yeah, lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Happy reading, everyone.
Oompa, loompa, doompa-dee-doo. I've got another puzzle for you. Oompa, loompa, doompa-da-dee. If you are wise, you'll listen to me.
What do you get from a glut of TV?
A pain in the neck and an IQ of 3.
Why don't you try simply reading a book?
Or could you just not bear to look?
You'll get no more.